It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Here in the seventh inning, the Yankees are trailing 2-0. That is the key man.
Hit high in the air to left field. Going to the corner, Yastrzemski. It's over the wall. It's a home run for Bucky Dent. Yankees get the lead 3-2.
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get it. It's a home run. A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2. Boy, the last guy on the ball club you'd expect to hit a home run. Just hit one into the screen. Bucky Dent.
Hi there, everyone. I'm Bucky Dent. Welcome to this week's episode of Deep to Left with Bucky Dent. We have an unbelievable guest today. They call him the Louisiana Lightning, but I call him Gator. He's not only a great pitcher, but he's been a great friend for a long time. But before we get there, on the line is Al Santiseri, the editor-in-chief of Yankee Magazines. Hi, Al.
Hey, Bucky. I can't wait to talk to Gator. He's a good friend of mine as well, and somebody whose stories are legendary, and that's what this podcast episode is going to be.
And we also have Yankees Magazine Deputy Editor John Schwartz, and we can't wait to talk to this guy, Gator, because he's one of the all-time unbelievable great Yankees.
For sure. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Okay, let's not waste any more time. Let's get him on the line right now. Well, Gator, man, it's great to have you on.
Well, say, yeah, well, it's always great to be on there, you know, anytime, but, you know, you with me, it makes it much better. We have a lot in common, don't we?
Yeah, I have Al and John. They're going to be on with us. And
yeah, they're going to throw their two cents in every once in a while.
I'm just here to watch you guys go.
And we're going to go, baby. This is going to be fun. But, you know, I want to talk about your career, you know, playing in New York, being teammates. And
I don't want to talk about my career. That's boring, man. I'm tired of talking about my career.
Hey, well, you did some amazing things, man. I'll tell you what.
Well, we all did amazing things, but do we have to keep talking about them?
Sure, because the people want to know.
Hey, I always laugh. It's like we tease you about your home run in Boston. You know, if we watch that replay enough times, that ball won't go over.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's why I start sweating.
I think that's what Yastrzemski thinks too.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, you know, when you got drafted by the Yankees and you came out of Southeastern Louisiana?
Southwestern. Southwestern.
Raging Cajuns. But
The Raging Cajuns.
Were you a Yankee fan back then?
Sure.
And you were excited about getting drafted by the Yankees?
Well, yeah, you know, I always tell the story. The story is in, you know, I've told the story many times, you know, to writers and interview guys. And, you know, it's in the books that you write and stuff like that. It, you know, when I was young and when baseball kind of got established into my life, I was probably 5, 6, 7 years old. Down here in Louisiana, you had two teams that were shown playing on the weekends. That was either the Yankees or the St. Louis Cardinals. Because you remember old Dizzy Dean and his brother? That was the commentators on the weekend television. So you got one of those. Well, my mom's favorite team was New York. So she just started watching the games, and she locked me in the house so she could watch the games, and that's how I became interested in the Yankees.
Tell us a little bit about what your feelings were the first time you put on that Yankee uniform and you got called up. I remember mine in 73 and when I got called up with the White Sox, and then when I put that Yankee uniform on in 77 when I got traded.
You know, as a minor league guy playing in Syracuse, playing in AA in West Haven, Connecticut, we used to drive by Yankee Stadium every once in a while in our games playing somebody else. You know, they're traveling by bus. So every once in a while we had a chance to drive in front of Yankee Stadium. And, you know, that's where all your dreams are. You know, that's where you dream of playing. You know, so for us, like in 74, when we, I know that's the last time that I saw Yankee Stadium, but don't forget, Yankee Stadium was being refurbished in 74, 75. So we were playing all, they were playing their games at Shea. So when I got called up in July, we were in Rochester, and Bobby Cox, who was my AAA manager, called me early in the morning, said, look, I got some great news. I got good news, got bad news. The good news is you're getting called up. The bad news is you got to be in New York in about 2 hours. So, you know, he said, I rented you a car. It's in the lobby. I'll meet you there. See you in 5 minutes. Pack your stuff. So I hurried up, threw all my stuff in suitcases, met Bobby in the lounge. He told me to drive to Syracuse, pick up all my belongings, and I had a flight out of Syracuse into LaGuardia at, I don't recall what time, but they were having a doubleheader against Boston that afternoon. Game started at 1, and my flight was supposed to get in there sometime around 2:30. You know, it was more or less for the second game, because Catfish was pitching the first game. And anyway, the plane was early. We left early. We had no problems. We get there early. So, you know, you get out of the cab, you go into Shea Stadium. They show you where the Yankee locker room is. The first guy I meet, of course, Bucky, is Pete Sheehy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, old Pete, you know, tells you all the ropes. You got to do this. You have to do that. And then he says, okay, well, let's go get your uniform. So we're looking at numbers, you know, and you already know there's numbers you can't get.
Right.
So we're going through numbers, and he's, you know, you're going like, oh God, don't give me 79 or 89 or, you know, don't, I don't want, oh no, you know, and he was grabbing uniform numbers, you know, and he'd grab a number and he'd look at you, and then he'd put the number back, and then he'd walk a little bit, go into another cubicle, get another number, and he goes, you know what, he says, nobody's ever made number 49 famous. He said, here, why don't you try to make it famous?
Wow.
So you're going like, dude, I just want a uniform. I don't know what's going to happen. Just, you know, just give me the uniform.
Yeah.
So that's how I got my number. So I got the number, I walked out, I went to the dugout, I met the first manager who was there at the time, was Bill Verdon. So I met him. He told me to go into the bullpen. So I walked in the bullpen. And, of course, in the bullpen is Sparky Lyle, Dick Tidrow, Dave Pagan. I think one of the left-handers that I had known in Syracuse, I think his name was Dave Cheadle. You know, within 5 minutes, you know, Sparky had given me my nickname and Tidrow had lit up my shoelaces, you know, so I was, you know, you're welcome to the big club. And then 10 minutes after I was in the bullpen, I was actually in the game.
Oh, so you got to pitch against Boston.
People said, did you ever get nervous? I don't know if you did, Bucky, your first time. I never had a chance to get nervous. I just got, before I knew it, I was pitching. You know, and once you start playing, you forget about everything else.
Hadn't you pitched like 4 straight days up to that point or something crazy?
Well, yeah, in AAA.
Yeah.
Look, when they tell you to go pitch, you go pitch. Now, what was in my favor is, you know, Boston didn't know who I was. They don't, you know, they don't know. I gave up a hit to, I don't know who got the first hit off of me, Fred Lynn maybe. He could have. I think I remember he just kind of dunked the ball in, or it could have been Rice. But, you know, that's the guys that you're going to go on eventually and face and have battles with all the time. But, you know, I did okay, but more or less because I was unknown. They really didn't know who I was.
So you got thrown in the fire real quick against the Boston Red Sox, didn't
you?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, man, I was in the kitchen getting pots and pans ready to burn, yeah. The grease was hot when I got
You know, as the complexion of those teams changed a little bit, guys like Bucky came along, you know, Goose in 78, but even before that, by 76, let's say, how would you, you know, both of you guys describe that group of players that you were both surrounded by. From a from an outsider standpoint, it looks like a really interesting group of guys, to say the least.
Probably one of the best group of guys I've played with. You know, I came over in 77. I came over on opening day, so I didn't get to spend as much time as Gator did with them. But I'll tell you what, I mean, as far as a group of guys, those guys are still outstanding today, even when we go back to old timers. You know, I mean, Gator's one of the guys that calls all the time to check on you and stuff like that. But, you know, those are great teammates. I mean, Gator played with them longer than I did. But as far as the group that we played with, they were awesome.
Well, yeah, that's true. In 75, which was the last year at Shea, When you fast forward and you look at and you talk about the 76 team, half that team was new in 76, maybe more than half. For me, you know, I was up and down. I didn't spend the whole year down. You know, the story with Martin is Martin didn't trust rookies, and I was still considered a rookie. When all of those guys start to come in and we started to form that club, you know, we wound up winning the American League championship. You know, Chambliss hits the home run, which was one of the biggest moments for the last 15 or so years, since they had won in 62 was the last time they had won a World Series. We had won a World Series. So that home run kind of signified the return of the New York Yankee franchise. Great things started to happen after that. And then, of course, the next year, you know, now you go to the World Series, you get blown out. We get blown out by the Reds. Okay, well, I didn't think anybody would have beat them anyway. You know, but like when 77 starts, you know, Bucky comes over, Reggie comes over. You know, you got a different team. He brought with him the hitter that guys are afraid to pitch to in certain situations. Because if you make your pitches, you get him out. Don't get me wrong. You can get him out.
Don't tell Reggie that.
He struck out more than anybody else, right? What I'm saying is, as a pitcher, if you make a mistake on a guy like that, you get punished, and he can hurt you. When he'd hurt you, it was a two-run homer, a three-run homer, maybe a grand slam. But you would get hurt by guys like that, and he would hurt other teams' aces. So when you're pitching as an ace, you got to be aware of those hitters that you can't afford to give up the big hit. And that's what Reggie did. Well, we didn't have that in 76. Okay, that's what he brought to us. So the team complexity was different when you look at hitting. Now, we had a great pitching staff. I developed into a good starter. Well, I wasn't there as a starter in 76. So that's how it all changes. You know, things just started to happen. But like I said, when Chris hit that home run, great things started to happen. The thing about the 78 club was, if you go at that point in July when we started to play ball again after being 14 games behind, it was because we started to play as a team again. And I think Bucky will remember this. Buck, you remember at the beginning of the season for like 1 or 2 months, we always had somebody on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
We never had the best team that we fielded on the field really for a long period of time up until that time in July. And what happens is when you start winning, okay, and everybody catches that fever about winning, you just never know where the hero every night's going to be. It never comes from the same guy all the time. It's true that there are guys that can carry a ball club, but it's not going to be every night. He might carry a club for a month, but not for 5 months. Somebody else has to step up, and that's what happened to that 78 club. Our 77 club, we just won all year. We just won. But the 78 club, once we started winning and it caught, you just never knew who was going to be the hero that night. And of course, Bucky, you know, we laugh because Bucky, when was the last time you hit a home run before that playoff game? You remember?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because he hadn't hit one in 2 months.
Hey, easy, Gator. I used to like you.
He doesn't hit home runs, okay? Bucky's not a home run hitter. He's a good hitter. But Bucky's ability is defense, okay? And what am I? I'm a pitcher, okay? I know he's playing shortstop. All I got to do is let him touch the ball, because if he touches it, you're out, Okay, but that's what makes pitchers feel at ease. When you know that your guy is playing behind you, if they touch it, you're out. And that's how that was our game plan. We didn't have team. I don't recall us pounding guys. Did you feel like every night you went out to play Bucky, you needed 7 or 8 runs to win a game?
No.
Not with our pitching staff. We won on pitching and defense. Okay, you know, you'd come in, when Cat was at his best, when Gullett was there, when Figgy was there, when I was there, you know, all you had to do was get us three runs at the most, and we'd make sure nobody got anything.
Yeah.
And that's how we'd win. Now, you make that one mistake pitch to Nettles, to Chambliss, to Reggie. Yeah, sure, they pop a 3-run home run in the 7th. The game is now goes from 2-1, 2-0, to 5-1, 6-0, 6-1. Well, yeah, now the game's out of hand. Now you lost. You know, but that's how it was. That's what we did. But we didn't give up 6 runs in the game. You didn't need to score.
And the guys that we played with, I mean – they were so much fun to play with. I mean, they know when they went between the lines what they had to do. But, you know, when you're on the bus rides or you're in the clubhouse and stuff like that, that was a fun part of that team.
Because those guys knew how to play the game. Right. They knew how to play the game, but they also knew how to have fun playing the game.
Right. I tell the stories all the time about, you know, with Art Fowler, you know, coming to the mound. And
Yeah, to the mound. Yeah, how much fun. Yeah.
When you come to the mound.
Because everybody thinks every time you come out there, it's a serious conversation. Yeah. How many times did you come up there and I'd ask him, well, what am I doing wrong? Or, and he'd say, I don't know wrong, but you're pissing Billy off. But it's twofold, because he knows if he comes out there and he gives me a little break, then I'm gonna do what I'm supposed to do. Okay? And the way you get the best of me is don't come out there and pat me on the butt. Come out there and tick me off so I get mad. That's when I'm gonna be better. And that's what he would do. I already know the base is loaded and nobody else, dude. You don't have to tell me that. That's not his job. What he wants to do is he's going to come out there and he's going to ask me, how are you going to get out of this mess? I don't know, Ron, but you're pissing Billy off. He's going to say something that we're going to get a kick out of, but it's going to do the job. And that's what he was good at. But it was fun. I mean, you know, all of those guys were great. Even as much trouble as Billy gave the organization, he was great at managing and playing for him. A lot of guys didn't like playing for him.
What was your relationship when you first came up with him? I know you were in the bullpen.
Well, he didn't trust me. Yeah, you know. Well, I tell the story about the time in Kansas City. It's in '77. I mean, I've been up and down. I had almost quit in '76 when they sent me down one time, because the time that I almost quit after one of the games that night that I actually said I was quitting after the game. When I was driving home, I said to myself, okay, that's it. I gotta, I don't have time for this. But anyway, when I was in the bullpen after the game, Cloyd Barrier, who was the pitching coach at the time, says, Gator, when you go in, he says, they're probably going to send you down. Well, you know, and my first response to CB was, well, why? And CB looks at me and he, you know, it's hard for him to answer. Okay. But the reason why they're sending you down, he said, was because you're not pitching. And you're going like, well, I know I'm not pitching, but I mean, if he doesn't put me in, how can I not pitch? I mean, he's got to put me in for me to pitch. So that's when CB said, look, he really doesn't trust rookies. And I said, well, CB, I'll never play here then, because I'm a rookie. I mean, how can I not be, you know? So, you know, that was the time that I almost quit, but you know, I didn't. I went to Syracuse. The year starts in '77 and we have injuries to our starting staff. So about a week or so before, we're in Kansas City, and we're there for a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I'm in the bullpen, and Monday night's game, we get into trouble in the 8th inning, I think. So Billy calls down into the bullpen, and he gets Tidrow up and he gets me up. Because there's a right-hander hitting and then Mayberry is coming up. So I don't recall what happened to the right-hander, but when Mayberry gets up, Billy called down right before he went out to the mound to make sure that we were both ready. So you figure, what would you figure?
We can bring you in. Yeah.
I would be in, right? Left against left? Okay. Well, then all of a sudden, he calls for Tidrow to face Mayberry. Okay, well, Tidrow goes in, and the first pitch Tidrow threw, Mayberry hit that ball in the water. We lose the game. We go in the clubhouse, and now the press is just, you know, trying to get an answer. Why? You know, why do you bring in this, that, you know, Tidrow, blah, blah, blah. And Billy's, you know, he's trying to explain his actions. Okay, so he kind of pacifies the reporters. Now we move on to the next night. Well, guess what happened the second night that we were there? Almost the same thing, but I think it's Brett that's hit, and Brett hits a ball off of Tidrow because he brings Tidrow in again to face the left-hander. Okay, while I'm in the bullpen warming up and I'm ready. So now Wednesday night game gets ready, and guess what happens? Almost the same scenario. Okay, but now on Tuesday night, you remember that report of Maury Allen?
Oh, yeah, Maury Allen. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I found out later that the story was that they were talking and Murray asked Billy, because Billy said something about me being a rookie to the press. And Maury asked him, well, if you never bring him in a game, Billy, how's he ever going to do the job? So I think what happened, Billy got the ass, you know, that he tried two times to make it work and it didn't. So now Wednesday, when I'm in the bullpen, Tidrow's in the bullpen again, same scenario, and Brett's the hitter, okay? And the score is tied. Brett comes up, Billy goes out, I'm in the bullpen, and then Sparky answers the phone, and he looks at me, and he says, you're in. So, you know, you're going like, oh, great. I've been warming up for two nights to get in. I was fresh two nights ago, not too bad last night, but then, you know, after throwing your third night in a row in the bullpen, it's almost like throwing two innings. Mm-hmm. And I get to face George Brett. He's only hitting like 350, right? So you go in, and you face Brett. And it's one of those things that you can never really understand. I ask him today. He still can't give me a good answer, okay? At that time, too, you remember Kansas City had the turf.
Yeah.
And Rivers, for some reason, was playing very, very shallow on Brett up the middle. And Brett hit a seed that Mickey charged in, picked it up on one hop. And you, Bucky, you know Mickey never had an arm, right?
No.
No. He threw a perfect one-hop strike to Munson, who tagged out UL Washington running from second to try to score. And, like, Mickey had two assists all year. That was one, okay? So now we go the very next inning, we score a run or so, and Billy makes me go back out. Instead of bringing in, you know, like a season guy, he makes me go back out. He tells me I'm going back out in the eighth inning. So I go out in the eighth inning. I get three up, three down. I come back. Now, it's the ninth inning. Don't you think the closer should come in the game?
with Sparky out there?
Yeah, well, guess what?
Yeah.
You're going back out. So you know what? I never knew exactly what he was trying to do. Was he trying to make me the GOAT? Because, you know, it had backfired two times, and that way he'd been able to say, you see what I was telling everybody? You know, so, but it didn't work that way. I got the three guys out. Okay, we win the game. That's how I got my first big league win as a reliever. That was the night I got my first win. What goes on is like a week and a half later is when Cat goes down with his first shoulder problem, and I have to make an emergency start against Seattle in New York. I'm getting ready to go out in the bullpen, and Billy runs out and he says, Catfish can't go. He says, you're the only guy that can go. He says, you got to try to give me three, four, five good innings. Well, I gave him eight in the third. I got into the ninth inning. And it's ironic because no other starter that we had all year had gotten into the ninth inning. And I'm a reliever, and I got into the ninth inning. Things change for me. That's my story. It's not like the team's thing. It's just my story. So that's something else. But that's how Billy was. Playing for him was tough. But the ironic thing was once you got his respect, you had something. You have it. He's behind you 100%. But for me to earn it, it took a hell of a long time.
Right. But, you know, Sparky Lyle, he had a pretty good role as far as helping you with your slider, didn't he?
Well, he's the one who taught it to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he didn't help me with it. He's the one that taught it to me. I didn't have a breaking ball that you'd say is a good pitch. I mean, I threw something that cut more or less in the AAA, but your ability to throw hard was really what kind of set you apart. Now, I could not only throw hard, Bucky, as you know, but I had great control as a guy who threw hard, which is not always a great combination. There are a lot of guys that throw hard, but they don't have great control. Okay, I had great control. And once I developed the slider that Sparky showed me, to be able to throw fastballs and spot them, and then all of a sudden you throw sliders that they can't hit, it makes you pretty, pretty damn good.
So, Bucky, take me into 78, if you will. You have Ron on the mound pitching probably the best season by a Yankees pitcher in 100 years. You know what he looks like, though. I'm sure you're as surprised as I am watching on TV now to see the ball coming out of his arm like that. But, I mean, just what is your level of confidence standing behind him every single time there during that incredible season?
With Gator on the mound, I mean, most of the time I got a night off when he was pitching because he threw so that hard slider that, you know, Nettles would have to be ready because, you know, they get out there and they'd hook it to third base, or they would hit a fly ball to right field or pull a fly ball to left field. You know, I remember Gator telling the story about him going and picking up Mickey when he was sick one night saying, you know, hey, you know, and I want Gator to tell that story because Mickey was sick and he says, where's Mickey? Why ain't he in a lineup? Tell that story, Gator. I'm going to go get him.
Well, we were smoking and, you know, we're catching Boston and I get to the ballpark. And I always had a customary routine. You know, you come in, you change halfway into your clothes. I'd walk in front of all of the lockers, go all the way down into the lounge. And when I'd pass Catfish, who was the last lock on the right in the locker room, then you go into the lounge, get a cup of coffee, and then you go into the training room and you go talk to Gene and Herman Schneider. Well, when I passed the by Catfish's locker, when you turn around, there's like a little bulletin board on Catfish's sidewall. And on there, they post the lineup. So as I pass, I just happen to look up and I see Paul Blair. Now, I got no problem with Paul playing center field, but Paul usually comes in late to spell someone in the outfield. So I go in the training room and I sit on the table. Hey, Gino, what's the problem? So Gino kind of looks and he bats his eyes and he called a little while ago. He said he's sick. He can't play. Now, we all know that Mickey was Mickey. Okay. So I had a feeling what was wrong, but you know, I didn't say anything. So I went to the lock and, you know, the guys start coming in, your routine starts to flow. Our routine is batting practice was what, Bucky, about 4:30?
Yeah. About 4:30. Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere around there. And then, you know, then the regular lineup hits. Well, at about 4:30, quarter to five, I'm about the only guy that's left in the clubhouse other than the clubhouse guys. Everybody else is on the field. Well, when everybody left, I called upstairs to find – I got Doris, who was the receptionist, and I asked Doris if Bob Fleming, who was Mr. Steinbrenner's driver, I asked Doris if Bob was upstairs. And she said, he's standing right here. I said, could I speak to him, please? So he gets on the phone. I said, Bob, this is Gator. And he goes, hey, Gator, what's happening? I said, Bob, is the old man here? And he said, no, he's not coming in tonight. I said, you got the car? He said, yeah, it's in the compound. I said, meet me there in about 5 minutes. He's like, fine. He didn't say anything. I put my clothes on. I run downstairs. I meet Bob. I tell Bob, you got to bring me to Rivers' apartment. I'm going to give you the address. And Mickey had several different places that he stayed in, okay? And where he was staying was not too far from the ballpark. So I got to the address, and I get out, and I walk up, and it's one of those apartment complexes. There's a guy behind a desk. And you have to be rung up, you know, to get to the room and all of that stuff. And I told the guy, I don't want to hear no crap from you. I said, if you don't let me up to Mickey Rivers' room, I said, I'm going to make a phone call. In about 5 minutes, two of the biggest guys you ever seen in your life are going to come over here, and they're going to beat the living out of you. he says he's in room 621, something like that. So anyway, I walk up there. I knocked on the door. And I hear behind the door, I hear, and I hear the chain, you know, slide open, and the door cracks open, but the chain's left on the door, and Mickey peeps around the door. And he looks at me and goes, hey, well, hey, hi, Gator. So I said, open the door. So he unlatches the door. I walk in, and I said, listen, you're going to put your clothes on. You're going to come with me to the ballpark. I said, you're going to dress, you're going to go stand in center field. I said, because I need you to be out there so the other team can see you. I said, I'm not going to let them hit a ball out there. I just need for you to be out there so that other team can see that you're there. So he's okay, fine. So he changed. He went. He dressed out. He went to center field. And I never let a guy, he didn't touch one ball all night. Okay, but to top that off, the little was 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored and 2 runs batted in.
So here's my question though, Ron. You're talking about that level of control. So I want to go for a second into the one game playoff. Obviously, look, I mean, you know, we have Bucky Dent here, we have Ron Gidry here. We're going to talk about this game. You get through those first innings. You got to feel pretty good to have that game close with the way Boston's hitting the ball. I mean, what's going through your head as they're in those early innings?
You just said my answer, okay? The when I got there, okay, there's no secret that I was pitching on one less day. And yep. You know, I mean, I had gone through 280 innings already. So I know I'm not going to be at my best, okay, because I really could have used that extra day, but it's not like you can't do the job. Okay. So what I was convincing myself of, like throughout the morning and that morning, I mean, Bucky knows the story, but that morning when I got to the clubhouse, I actually went to sleep underneath the training table in the training room.
That's what I was going to tell you, to tell the story about sleeping under the training table.
I kept thinking about, you know, okay, the only thing that I need to do is keep this game close. Okay, one run, certainly no more than 2 runs. Because if I give up one run, okay, I could lose that game 1-0. But if we don't score, I can't win anyway, because I need one to win. Okay, so if you make a mistake and you give up 2 runs, okay, with the club that you have, 2 runs is not an insurmountable lead, because one swing of the bat, 2 runs can be erased. And you have guys who can do that, because there's always somebody that's doing something special on this club. All you got to do is is the best job that you can. So I gave up the home run to Yaz. Okay, but that's the shortest home run Yaz ever hit in his freaking career. Okay, I mean, if it had been 301 feet, he'd have never got it. It'd have went foul. Okay, so whether the pitch was it a bad pitch? Yeah, it was a bad pitch. A guy hit a home run, but it wasn't like Yaz hit the ball in straightaway right field 400 feet. Okay, You know, that's one of those things. Oh, tip my cap to Yaz, okay? Now, the run that I gave up in the fourth inning to Burleson, Burleson scored the run, but I gave up a hit to Burleson. That's the one that really ticks you off, okay? That's a slider that I hung. He hit a double down the line, and he eventually scored. That's the second run. But now they get no more. You know, and as the game is progressing, yeah, Torres is pitching a great game, but, you know, you're not throwing a bad game, okay? I made the one bad pitch that I really thought, okay? But you know, as a starter, when you're pitching, because I said it earlier, as a starter, as the number one guy, if you make one bad pitch, a good hitter's going to make you pay. And as you're sitting in the dugout in the seventh inning and you're going like, okay, well, it's probably time something's going to happen because this is how we've been playing. We could be up 3-0, and then all of a sudden here's a 3-run homer. The game goes from 3-0 to 6-0. Now I don't have to worry about making a mistake pitch because if I make a mistake pitch and a guy hits a home run, I still got 3 or 4 or 5 runs to play with, okay? But you can't do that when you're behind or the game is even. Okay, and you're sitting in the dugout, and, you know, all of a sudden, you look up, oh, man, we got a first and second, you know, and then now all of a sudden, Bucky comes up, and I'm sitting in the dugout, and I'm watching, and then you see the you know, oh, crap, man, that got to hurt, you know, you see Bucky walking around limping, and all of a sudden, you see Mickey going over, and you see Mickey talking, and you know, the ordinary people are not paying attention to what's going on. Because that's when he gave you his bat,
yeah,
right?
He gave me the bat right then. Told me you got the wrong bat.
So, you know, like nobody notices that. Everybody's just watching Bucky limp and, you know, no, okay, now the game resumes and you go back and you see. And then all of a sudden, you know, now everybody runs out in the dugout. And I never went out to see it, okay? Because when he hit it, I'm just thinking, well, here we go. This is who we are because that's a 3-run homer. Now, I didn't realize that freaking ball just went over the net, but it's just like Yaz's home run. It just was fair. Okay. Bucky's ball went over the net. That's a home run. I don't care. It could have been 600 feet, could have been 320. It's a home run. That's all we know, right? But all you know is now all of a sudden, one swing of the bat, now the score is 3-2. But we weren't finished. Mickey gets on, he steals, and all of a sudden we get a base hit. Now we're up 4. But, you know, that's who we were. That's who we were. That's how we played. Somebody's going to be a hero, and it turns out to be Bucky. You know, here's your teammate. And like I said, he hadn't hit a home run probably in 2 months. But who cares?
Who cares?
He hit the biggest home run when we needed the biggest hit of a game. He gave it to us.
Well, you know, you're talking about guys making great plays. I thought Pinella, you know, with the two plays he made.
Well, Pinella, I think, made the play of the game.
Yeah,
you know,
early
the
in the
play
game
that he made in right field. Yeah, I think, you know, he's a unsung hero.
Mm-hmm.
But – you know, nobody wants to talk about Lou and his, you know, that as much as we love him, we don't talk about that. You get paid to do that.
Well, the one in the ninth inning, he got paid a lot of money because he lost to his son.
Yeah, you got paid. You did what you did. I mean, you know, look, if you go 0-for-4, you better play damn good defense out there. But that's, you know, but you remember what we talked about. We had so many guys on that club who were professional ball players who did everything the right way. And you know, when you ask Lou about that play, why was he able to make that? You know, he actually shaded that way right before they hit that ball.
Yeah, because he said that you didn't have your good stuff because you're pitching on 4 days rest. You didn't have your good stuff.
Yeah, you're going like, okay, well, you know, no, the computers don't say things like that today. They don't have that in there. That's not factored in there. But that's how smart the guys were.
Gator, after you came out of the game and Goose comes in, I know, you know, things got a little dicey, especially in the ninth inning. I want to ask both of you guys, what were the emotions you guys had? Obviously, Bucky, you were in the field, so you had a little bit more, you could use a little more of that nervous energy. Gator, you were out of the game. As, you know, Goose retired the last couple outs and, you know, you guys are only up by one run. What were the emotions each of you guys had there late in the game there?
You know, I was at shortstop, and it came down to the epic battle, you know, Goose against Yastrzemski. And, you know, everybody's saying, you know, what are you thinking at shortstop? And I joke around, I'm saying, don't hit the ball to me, you know. But no, I was just teasing. But, you know, Goose, I'd played with him for so many years. He had a knack of reaching back and getting a little bit more. And when he was going to make that pitch, he wound up and he threw a fastball right down the middle almost. But it had about another 2 feet on it. And Yastrzemski just missed it and popped it up to third base. And it was like, oh my God, it's over finally. Just to see that battle between Goose and Yastrzemski, you don't think about making a mistake or anything like that. You just think about what you're going to do. You know, if the ball's hit to me, what am I going to do with it? Where am I going to go? You know, who's running? All that goes through your head. But the battle between him was a classic. Goose against Yastrzemski. And, you know, I wanted to go back, you know, earlier in the game in the seventh inning when I hit the home run. Gator knows, you know, Billy and I didn't have a real fuzzy relationship either. And I tell the story, I think if Billy was the manager, I probably wouldn't have hit there.
He might have not have hit, yeah.
Yeah, I might not have hit because he had a habit of pinch hitting for me. I think he pinch hit for me in 77 like 30-something times when I came over. And actually, guys used to, you know, Munson used to whistle at me when I was on deck. I was getting pinch hit for and I'd turn around. So I would just stand in the on-deck circle. I wouldn't even go up there. But honestly, I probably wouldn't have hit if Bob Lemon wouldn't have been the manager. But as far as that moment, that was just a classic moment between him and Yastrzemski.
Ron, were you on the bench or were you in the clubhouse for that?
No, I was in the clubhouse by at that time. I mean, I stayed when he first came in the cellar.
Yeah.
Because it was the only time that I really had words with the manager, because I really didn't want to come out. I tried to convince Lemon that I was fine. I mean, I know I gave up a hit to George Scott, but it was like a 40-hop ground ball. You know, he just put it in a great spot. It would have been different if he had hit a ball off the wall or a line drive screaming base hit, but it was like a CNI ground ball. You know, and I still felt like I could get guys out and I could stay in to at least complete that inning.
Go back to the beginning of the game when you tell the story. You know, you said you were sleeping under the training table and George came in and he couldn't find you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had always noticed that training table in Boston, it was the only table that I had seen that had some plywood at the bottom that braced the legs. And it really looked like a great place that you could crawl into to take a nap because it was a full sheet of plywood. Most all tables are just braced with, you know, a 2x4, a cat of corn or crossways or straight edged, you know. But this had a sheet of plywood at the bottom that was connected to all four legs. So I told Gino, I said, I'm going to crawl underneath there because I got there early. I didn't wait for the bus to go. I just got there early. And I told Gene, I said, Gene, I don't want to be disturbed by anyone. I said, if the president calls and invites me for tea, tell him I'm going to call him back later. So he understood what I was getting across. So I had been under that table maybe 30, 45 minutes. And when you're resting and you're resting pretty well, you can actually hear a lot, but you're probably dozing. And all of a sudden, I heard the door slam and I heard this rough voice, you know. And I knew it was Steinbrenner. He walks in the table and he looks at Gene and all of a sudden he goes, Gino, he says, I need to talk to Gator. Have you seen him? I gotta tell him how big of a game this is. And you're sitting underneath that table and you're saying, I already know how big of a game this is. I don't have to have you telling me how big. And I'm listening to him talk to Gene, and Gene tells the old man, he said, boss, he said, the last time that I saw Gator, he told me that he was going to take a walk down the right field line. So he took off. Now, we never saw him again. I don't know what he did. Gino doesn't know. Okay, but Gene just kind of flipped open the sheet over the table, and all of the guys were sitting in the training room. I just, hey, guys, how's it going? I just got up, I walked, I dressed, and I left. Everybody was just, their eyes were just, man, I'm starting pitchers taking a nap.
Yeah, and we had some guys that had fun.
And, you know, and then, of course, in the ninth inning, Goose drives us crazy.
Yeah, I want you to tell the story about when Goose first came over, and they were going to take you out of the game, and he was warming up.
Oh,
and
he'd start off
struggling.
He laughs at that. Like I said, you have to laugh, and you know, when you talk to Goose, and Goose is such a dear friend to both Bucky and I.
Yeah.
And when we laugh and when you're talking, he always says, you know, when someone says, why were you guys 14 games out? He always says, because of me. And he will always say, it's because of me we were 14 games out. So before you ask, I'm telling you, okay? Because he struggled as a pitcher when we got him. He struggled badly. And you know why. I mean, I always told him why, but Goose, it just didn't fly. He didn't think it was like that. But I always believe that, you know, that the predecessors, the great players that played in New York, they made you earn your stripe. You just didn't come into New York and wear the pinstripes. You had to earn your pinstripes. We all had to go through things like to earn our stripes, because those ghosts in center field, they didn't take kindly to guys coming in there and just taking the world by storm. Not too many guys ever did that. So when Goose came in, he just was trying too hard to do what the job that he was supposed to be doing. And when you try that hard, when you try to be somebody that you're not, it doesn't work. You know, as he was struggling, the game that Bucky's talking about is I know he's struggling. He doesn't have very many saves up until this point, and it's somewhere around late May, and you're having a great year, you know, but like – April, May, you can't tell what kind of season you're going to have. Nobody knew I was going to win 25 games. I didn't know I was going to win 25 games. I won 16 the year before, so if I win 16 again, I think I'm having a great year. So you're not putting a great amount of emphasis on those games at the beginning. You're just trying to win. You know, every 5 days I'm going out there and I'm doing a good job. So we get into the ninth inning of this game, and we're actually playing Kansas City, and we're beating Kansas City 2-1. I get the first guy out, and the next guy gets a base hit to right field. So as customary, when the ball goes out and nobody's on, Bucky's going to get the bag. Willie's going to go out, be the cutoff guy, you know, and all I'm going to do is just kind of shade towards wherever Bucky's going. So in case there's a bad throw, the more gloves behind, the less that can happen. So as I'm walking to back up Bucky, I just happen to look up in center field, and I see Goose in the bullpen warming up. So, you know, Willie gets the ball. He tosses it to Bucky. Bucky tosses the ball back to me. I walk up to the mound, and then I hear timeout. And I see Billy walking out to the mound, and I'm going, oh, no, no way. So I go up to the mound, and I'm standing up on the mound, and I'm waiting for Billy, and Munson comes over, and Bucky comes over, and Willie comes over. Everybody comes kind of hanging around the mound. And Billy walks up, and before he says a word, I got my glove in front of my face so the cameras can't see. But when he walks up, before he can say a word, I look down at him, and I go like, if you plan on bringing that into this game here, I said, Sunday when I have to pitch again, I said, I'm going to throw one pitch. I'm going to fake an injury. And I said, I'm going to walk off the mound and leave your ass high and dry. I said, because until that starts getting guys out, I'm not coming out of any more of my game. So he looks at me, and he never said anything. He just goes, okay, you got it. And he left. He turned around and he left. So when the closer is ready, okay, the closer does not warm up and not go in the game. Before Billy even got in the dugout, Goose was on the phone from the bullpen calling into the dugout trying to find out why he's not in the game. Now, we're on the field, so I can't tell you I knew at that moment what happened, but I found out after. And what happened was when he called in the bullpen, Fowler answered the phone, and he was irate. And Fowler gave Billy the phone when Billy got in, and all Art told me what Billy said was, when the game is over with, he said, you go talk to number 49. And he hung up the phone. So I got the next two guys out. The game ends. You know, you win 2-1. Everybody comes over to try to congratulate me. And I'm booking. I'm trying to get to the dugout because I want to get my jacket. I want to hurry up and go into the locker room because I know he's going to be pissed when he comes in. I got in the locker room, and I got my chair, and I turned my chair around so I could face the doorway. So as the guys came in, I knew he was coming in, you know, and all of a sudden now you start seeing the bullpen guys walking in. So like I saw, you know, one or two guys come in, and sure enough, he's about the third guy that walks through that door. But he walked through that door and he was low shagging. I mean, his neck was a bowed out. His face was red. He turned that corner and he took like one step and he raised that big hand of his and he had his finger pointed. And before he could say anything, I was just sitting in my chair. I was stretched out. I just held up my hand and I looked at him and I said, that'll be far enough. I said, until you start getting guys out, I said, don't plan into coming to any more of my games. I said, I will take care of my problems. You take care of your own problems. And he got about two-thirds of the way from the door to my locker, right at the corner. It's not but about 15 feet away. We're, you know, the doorway is 15 feet from me. He got about 10 feet. We had about 5 feet in the front of us, just enough that his hand was about 2 to 3 feet away from my nose. And he just looked at me, and for like a moment there was just silence, and he looked at me, and he goes, you know what? He said, you're right. The way I've been pitching, he said, I wouldn't even want my ass in those games. He said, let's go get us a beer. So him and I walked almost hand in hand. We went and get us a beer. Everything was forgotten. We were great. But about a week after that, you remember, Bucky, it was like a light switch went out.
Oh, yeah.
We were playing. I don't know who we were playing. But he came in, and that's the night that Mickey was in center field in the sprinter stance.
Oh,
you remember that?
Oh, yeah. He had his back towards center field, towards
home plate. He had his back towards the center field, and all of a sudden, when Goose was ready to throw his pitches in the game, and Munson was standing up, and he made him turn around, and Rivers was in center field in a sprinter stance with his butt facing home plate because all he was doing was chasing fly balls.
Yeah.
But from that night on, Goose was unhittable. He threw 8 of the hardest warm-up pitches I ever saw. Because Catfish and I were sitting next to us in the dugout, and when he threw the first one, I actually sat up straighter, and I looked at Cat, and Cat looked at me, and Cat goes, I don't throw the ball hard, but that seems to me to be pretty hard. And I said, well, I throw the ball hard, and it's damn hard. And we watched him, and every pitch got harder. And we looked at each other, and we go like, well, I'm glad I'm not hitting. And he just went through 3 guys like a knife goes through some butter. Okay, but from that point on, it was like you earned your pinstripes. And boom, he was fine.
I think that's the night that Mickey jumped on the bullpen car when they brought him in.
Yeah, that's all of that. It's
that's
all the same.
Yeah.
But that's how everything was going for him. I mean, you know, he was struggling. He was trying too hard. Instead of just being himself, you know, just be Goose Gossage. You don't have to be Goose Gossage, the best right-hander in the game. Just be Goose Gossage.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, we had fun at his expense because you had to. But even he was having fun at his failures because he didn't let his failure get to him. Because if you let it, you get yourself out of your game. And he never did that. I mean, he just tried too hard. Instead of just going like, okay, take a step back. Let me be the guy who signed to come here. Let me be the guy who in Pittsburgh last year led the league in saves over, you know, be that guy. Don't be a guy who you don't know. And that's who he was trying to be.
Right.
But everything changed. And of course, you know, everything, it's history. It's what we talk about all the time. It's why Bucky and I talk about the playoff game. Because after that, you didn't worry about, you know, it's like what the team would do when Moby came close. Once we got into the seventh inning, we knew we won the game. All we had to do was get a lead going into the latter part of the game because we didn't lose too many games after, you know, we got into the sixth, seventh inning.
Yeah. Well, people always talk about the guys on the team. You know, they always ask me about Thurman Munson. And I just chuckle sometimes because I got visions of, you know, when you were on the mound or Goose was on the mound and the count went 3-2, he didn't even put a sign down. He would just like.
He didn't put a sign. He just
waved his hand.
Not in the latter part of the game. It was like, well, dude, I need a. Who are you going to fool?
Right.
Okay, you throw fastballs for strikes, sliders out of the strike zone. Goose, what you going to throw, that loose cutter? Yeah, just throw it, okay? You know, but you know, when you talk about that, okay, when you talk about Munson, you're talking about one of the best catchers in the game, okay? And as a pitcher, you don't have to worry about anything. He's going to call the right pitches at the right moment. It takes, you know, more pressure off of me. Okay, and the least things that we have to think about, the better we are. Okay, and having to throw to Munson was just a blessing. When we'd get into the latter part of the games, we'd look in for signs. He just flashes, come on, give me what you got. You know, he'd just give me that little sign with his hand, just kind of look off. You remember, Bucky, how he'd give you that? He'd always look off the side. You know, he wouldn't look at you. He'd just turn to the side, and then he'd look back at you and like, oh, who are you going to fool? Just
right.
Bring me what you got. Okay.
Yeah. Just bring
it on. And it was so fun. And he'd actually sometimes tell hitters what was coming.
Right.
You'd be pitching and you'd ask him, hey, am I tipping my pitches? Because it looks like they know what I'm throwing. And he'd look at you and go like, well, they do. I'm telling them. Why are you telling them? Well, because I want to see if they can hit it. Because if they can't hit when I'm telling them, guess what? They ain't going to hit when they don't know.
Yeah. I remember Yogi would tell his guy, you know, he'd do something like that too. And, you know, you say, why are you telling me? He says, well, if you're gonna shake me off, then you call the game. I'm just going to tell them what.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, guys like that, they played the game and they had fun at the game. It's not always that you have to be so serious. But those guys that you play with, they were just some of the greatest guys to play the game with. We all had our different characters. We were all different. But it's amazing that, you know, 25 guys with 25 different attitudes, 25 different opinions, really actually got along so well with each other.
Oh, we did. We did. You know, I say it all the time, you know, between the lines, nobody was going to beat us. And, you know, you talk about Munson and, you know, I got to bring up Puff, you know, like when Goose came over, you know, people don't understand, you know, like Puff at third base, Nettles, we called him Puff. He would yell at Gossage, throw harder, you know, during the inning. Goose would reach back and try and throw harder.
That was the camaraderie of that club. And everybody pitched in. You remember the time that Lou was 4-for-4? He was hitting in the ninth inning, in the eighth inning with a chance to go 5-for-5. And Nettles spit on the railing by the batter's box. And he asked Lou what it was. And Lou had a weak stomach. Okay. And he spit a haka on that bar and it started to hang down. And Nettles goes, hey, Lou, what is that? And when Lou turned around and he saw that, he started gagging. He was the next hitter. He goes up and he wound up striking out. And he was 4-for-5, but he was so mad at Nettles because he could have went 5-for-5, and Nettles did it on purpose. He was sitting in the dugout. And he goes, I never went 5-for-5. I'll be damned if he does 5-for-5. We'll never hear the end of it. He went and he spit on the ball. I mean, we were already winning, okay? So, you know, there's one more hit, it's going to make the game a rout, okay?
Yeah.
So what's one more hit, Lou? But
yeah.
Lou got a chance to go 5-for-5.
Oh, I tell you what, Lou was one of the funniest, intense guys that I've ever played with
in my life. You could talk about him for 5 hours and not get bored.
I'm telling you, that night in Seattle when the chicken was out there and you were pitching and the Seattle chicken, and we were walking out. I remember because I was walking with you. We were walking to the mound and the chicken was standing on the mound with the ball. And Lou was behind us. And you went to walk up and the chicken dropped the ball. And
it dropped the ball.
Lou threw his glove as hard as he could at that chicken. Hit him in the tail.
He was mad.
He hit him in the tail and he started screaming at him.
And then about fried chicken tonight. Yeah. I wonder what was that clubhouse guy's name?
I forgot.
You remember? I'm thinking to myself, I hope we don't have fried chicken. I ain't eating it.
Well, about two innings later, the chicken comes out with a towel and he's waving it at Lou in left field. Killing myself laughing. Yeah, I surrender. You know, talking about relationships, you had a great relationship with Yogi Berra. I mean, some of the stories, you guys wrote a book, Driving Mr. Yogi. Tell that story about, you know, when he went to do the affliction.
With the Aflac thing?
The affliction commercial.
Oh, yeah, the affliction. Yeah. Well, every morning, you know, pick him up 7 o'clock sharp. So I'm always there, you know, a few minutes before seven. So where my truck is parked and the entrance doors, if you look straight through the lobby, the elevators are on the left side of the lobby. So you see that whoever comes out of the elevator, you can see right through the doorway. So I would always judge every morning if he, what kind of mood he was in, because believe it or not, now everyone knows how beloved that man was. Well, at 7 o'clock in the morning, there were always people in the hotel lobby waiting just to get a glimpse of him. So as he would come out the elevator, if you would see him waving at the people who were hollering at him, he'd wave, you know, he'd never stop, but he was cordial, he'd wave. So, okay, well, you know, he'd come out and he had a little smile on his face. Okay, fine, that's going to be a good day. But if he walked out and he never waved, you got a feeling that it wasn't going to be a good morning. So this particular morning, it was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday morning. So I'm watching him and he walks out of the elevator and he ain't waving. So I had reached over, I had opened the passenger door, so you know, all he'd have to do was hop in. And so he gets in the truck. Now, when he came through the doors, I could hear him grumbling. And I heard a few cuss words in that grumbling. So I'm going, oh, God, what's the problem? So he gets in the truck. Hey, buddy, how you doing this morning? Oh, God, he's you know, that rough voice he's got. And he starts complaining. Oh, I just got off the phone with Timmy. I got to fly to California on Friday night. Says, I got to go make this affliction commercial. So when he says it, I'm going like, okay, what possibly could he be talking about? When United Way, cancer, you know, I know there's something in there somewhere, but he hadn't said anything. And he's, you know, and he all of a sudden he turns around, he looks at me, you know what, that damn duck. So it hit me and I turned around and I looked at him. I said, you mean Aflac? He looks at me and he points his finger like he's shooting you. And he goes, yeah, that's it. So I popped out laughing. Okay. And I mean, I lost control of the truck. My tire went over the curb. I almost went in those bushes. I'm laughing. He starts laughing because now he realizes what he said. So we both laughing. So I finally get control of the truck and I drive and I go on and we keep laughing, and throughout the day we're talking about it. So I bring him to the airport Friday. He leaves. So he calls me Saturday afternoon with his itinerary for Sunday. And he's coming in like 12:45 on Sunday afternoon. Well, our game starts at 1. So that morning I went to tell Joe Torre. I said, Joe, I said, I'm not going to be here for the beginning of the game. I got to pick up Yogi at the airport. Oh, he goes, take care of him. Don't worry about the game. So, okay, fine. So I watch practice. I leave, the game's getting ready to start. I run to the airport. So I'm waiting in the truck and I see him come down. He's got one little bag. So as the door opens, I go over, I grab the bag and, hey buddy, welcome back. Boy, he says, oh, thank you. He says, how's everything going? I was really good. So I open the door. He gets in the truck. He sits in the passenger seat. I walk around, I open my back door, put his bag in, and I get in the driver's seat, I open the door. And then I put my seatbelt on, I start the truck, and I'm just getting ready to pull away. And he leans over, and he puts his left hand on my right shoulder, and he kind of leans in. We're the only two people in the truck. The windows are up, and he talks in this low voice like he doesn't want anybody to hear what he's going to say. And he leans over, and he goes, "Gator," he said, "you know those ducks really don't talk, right?" I thought I was going to pee in my pants when he said that.
I tell you.
We had a great relationship.
That is an amazing story.
Well, being around him as a player and later, I tell you what, there wasn't a more special guy than that guy. I mean, he said some of the funniest stuff, but he was wonderful. There's a couple more questions I wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to let you go. And that is, you know, you and Willie were named co-captains, and you had your number retired. That's quite an honor. That's special. I mean, from walking in to, you know, getting sent down to driving home thinking you're going to quit to being one of the all-time greats of being a co-captain and having your number retired. That's quite an honor.
When you leave, when you say, okay, that's it for me. I got enough. I can't do it. Whatever the reasons are, and you walk away, you always wonder if you did enough and if your club appreciated the job that you did. Okay, because nobody comes up and says anything. That's your job. You're supposed to do that. Well, the day that they called to tell me that they were going to retire my number was, you know, just I couldn't believe that was going to happen. You know, retiring your number was, you know, like the pinnacle of anything that you can do there. But I never really realized if they retire your number, then they give you the plaque. Okay, I thought that my number was just going to be retired. I just never thought about the plaque that was going to be out in center field. The day that they had, the day that they presented me with all that, when I walked out from the clubhouse down the steps and I got in the dugout, when I walked up like the first step so I could see the playing field, I saw the monument underneath the cloak, and it hit me what the hell was really going on. You know, that you'd be enshrined out there. And that's the first time that tears came to my eye, because I realized exactly what the hell was going on. For me, like, well, if you ever wanted an answer, there's your answer, idiot.
Hey, well, my number's out there, but it's Posada. Dadgummit, Gator, I'm shoot.
Hey, look, I tried to do a lot of things, but unfortunately, you know how hard it was with the old man.
Oh man, I tell you, I know. Woo. You know, you were a coach for him, and I managed for him. Holy cow!
Oh, yeah, well, we all had our experience, but he was fun. I mean, it was as rough as you think he was. He was really a good guy, but I don't think that he liked the good guy title. I think he liked to be the rough, mean guy. You know, he's a guy like he would wear the black hat. Mm-hmm. He didn't want it known that he had a white hat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because, you know, he did everything for the club. And there was nothing he would not do for the club.
Well, my last question for you is, before we let you go, and it's been just a fun time talking to you, is, you know, you go to spring training and you know, you spent some time down there this year with a guy like Gerrit Cole. I mean, for him coming to New York, I mean, and you being a legend there, I mean, did you spend much time with him, you know, talking about New York, what it's like, you know, what it's like to pitch there? Because it's a different animal.
You know, it's one of the things that I told him early. And with all the intense scrutiny, our time was really stolen from us with the COVID-19 thing and everything that came about.
Mm-hmm.
He's very cordial. He's fun to talk to. You have to have a degree to talk to him, though, because he's, you know, he talks things that are really that I'd have never imagined, you know. And you go like, well, after talking to him, you realize that as good as you thought you were really harsh, because if you know what he knows, you might have been better. Okay. But he's really great to talk to. And I just felt like we didn't have the opportunity to spend enough time together. But he'd come over sometimes and ask some questions, and I told him, you know, the biggest thing that I would talk to you about is playing in New York. And he says, I want to know. I want to get with you. I want to know. But we never really had a time. You know, I just wish that we'd have been able to have more time, and we would have probably had some time, you know, as the spring, you know, came and gone.
Here's the good news. He signed a pretty long contract with the team, so I think you're going to get your chance there.
Yeah. You know, we might have to wait till next year, and I might get to tell him what it would be like, you know, playing in New York, because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if anybody knows what's going to happen to the game from, you know, from here on out. And if it's next year, well, then we worry about next year.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Gator, a lot for all the fans out there, they don't know what a great cook you are, and I always look forward to going to Yogi's tournament, cooking frog legs.
Yeah. I told you before why you want to talk about the crap that I did. We could have talked about cooking for 2 hours.
I know. Do you call them crayfish or crawfish?
We call them crawfish.
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 Well, if I can get down here with you, I'd love to come down there and shoot some ducks. I want to come shoot some ducks.
You don't do nothing anyway.
You're right.
You do sit on the beach.
Well, I'll tell you what I called you.
In your shorts? What?
Hey, easy, pal, because when I called you the other day, you had trouble getting out of that damn chair. But
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's right.
If we're cooking,
that's the difference. Your body jumps up when you're cooking, because you know when you're cooking, you got to drink at the same time. Because if you don't drink, it ain't going to come out good.
That's true.
Yeah, you can always rub some extra vodka on the top of wherever it's sore. We'll rub a little vodka on it.
There you go.
Well, yeah, Al come down here. He knows what we're talking about.
Oh, Al gets sick. He gets sick all the time, though. I took him fishing. He got sick.
He can get sick there, though.
Yeah, he went down to see Pettit, and he got sick.
Bucky, no offense. I think the next podcast we launch is going to be a cooking hour with Ron Guidry.
There you go. We'll do that.
Well, no, but what you got to do, Bucky, is you got to plan it so when we have the next one, okay, you already have come down, so, and you can eat the stuff. So that way, when we talk about it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
There you go. You got it. That's a deal, man. That's a deal.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Well, Al, you're welcome. You've been here before. We've always said you're welcome to come
back. Thank you. It was one of the best times I've had. It didn't feel like work, I'll tell you that much. And you know, I always tell Bucky and everybody.
We don't want it to feel like work.
No.
It's supposed to be fun. Look, we're going to tell you, Al, if you come down here to work, don't bother about coming, okay?
I'm coming to drink beer and eat frog legs. That's what I'm coming to do.
Gator, we have to worry about Al. I took him fishing. He got sick. He went to see Pettit. He got sick. He fell out of the damn boat in Goose's pond, almost drowned.
Yeah, I've had some troubling times, let's say.
New York City, boys.
Well, Gator, this has been great, man. Love talking to you, you know.
I love talking to you. You know that. You're one of my good friends. And stay in touch.
Buddy.
Al,
yep,
is
yes.
Always good talk. Was John there?
Hey, thanks so much, Ron.
So love you too, man.
All right. Talk to you later.
Guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, what a great interview. Not only was he a great teammate, but just a great friend, and the stories. Oh, my God. I just love talking about those old days with the 77, 78 Yankees, and actually talking about his career, you know, how he started in the bullpen and went on to be one of the great pitchers, you know, a Cy Young Award winner and a guy that had his number retired, Yankee captain. I mean, he's just a special guy, and I was just so glad to talk to him.
I got to say, I mean, we're making history here. Not only are we talking to the guy who, as I mentioned, probably had the best pitching season by a Yankee in the last 100 years, but we finally get to test out the bleep tool on this podcast.
You can't bleep them things out, man. That's part.
Yeah, I don't know if we should.
That's part of him, man. That's part of the story, you know. But I just love him, you know. And he's not only been a great teammate, he's been a great friend, you know, forever. I mean, he's always checking to see how you're doing, calling guys, and you know, and say, hey, what are you doing? And you know, I'll joke around with him. You know, are you on that tractor, or are you sitting down, or what are you doing? You know, you're shooting ducks or killing frogs, and he'll start laughing, you know, and. It's just always good to talk to him.
Here's the thing. I mean, this is episode 7 of this, Bucky, and I've loved the first 6. This episode is exactly what we pitched to you at the beginning. You know, talking to your teammates, just sharing stories, getting you guys laughing. I mean, I was sitting there silent for most of this thing, trying to crack up silently so I wasn't laughing into the microphone most of the time. But that was just awesome.
I agree. He's a special guy.
Yeah, we didn't get to a bunch of the stories about Pinella and some of the other guys, but we'll do that one on the next one when we talk about cooking.
Hey, if it gives me an excuse to go back to Louisiana and spend a day with him or a weekend with him there, we could do the podcast there anytime we want. I would love it.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to put floaters on you so if we go duck hunting, you won't sink.
I'll stay home for that.
Obviously, we're really proud of this podcast. We're really excited about the conversations we get to have. And, you know, we've been getting some really strong feedback about it so far. But we actually got a very specific question from a reader this week, which is related in a sense to, you know, our conversation just now about 77 and 78. The question is from Wayne Hermans. And Bucky, he asked us to pass it along to you. So I'm just going to go ahead and read it. Mr. Dent, I'm really enjoying the podcast. I really enjoyed the latest one with Andy. I had the good fortune of briefly meeting him his rookie year, and he was truly a class act. I would love to see you interview some of the guys from your Yankees years and Paul O'Neill as well. Those are good ideas, Wynn. Anyhow, my question for you is, what was your relationship with Greg Nettles like? The reason I ask is because I became best friends with an older kid in the neighborhood in upstate New York in 1977. He introduced me to baseball and the Yankees. His favorite player was Greg, and since you played next to him, I chose you as my favorite player. I moved out of New York when I joined the Marines, but it's 43 years later, and we're still best friends, and you're still my favorite Yankee. God bless. That's from Wayne Hermans. I love that question. Obviously, Bucky, before you answer, I just want to encourage everybody to, you know, send us questions like that to podcast@yankees.com. We'd love to get them, you know, in front of Bucky. And so, yeah, Bucky, what was your relationship with Greg like?
Well, Wayne, Greg was one of a great teammate, you know, and he was probably the best third baseman that I ever played with. And, you know, we called him Puff because, you know, he'd always puff when you'd be standing around talking. All of a sudden you turn around and go, where did he go? And he'd puff. But he was a great teammate. He was a great third baseman. And he had an unbelievable dry sense of humor. And that group of players that I played with in the Yankee organization from 77, you know, to 82 that I got traded with were different characters. And Puff was one of the main guys. You know, he could get really serious when the game was on, but then he could get really to be a lot of fun off the field because he had that dry, sarcastic sense of humor. And he was a great teammate. I just saw him down in spring training before the virus started. We did a show together and told some stories, but he was a great teammate and I loved him.
Well, that's awesome. Wayne, thank you so much for asking that question. Like I said, I hope that you know, everyone will start asking some questions. We can get Bucky to get you guys some answers. Al, Bucky, that was a lot of fun, I gotta say. You know, episode 7's in the books right now. Every day we're getting, it seems, hopefully a little closer to maybe finding some clarity as to when we might get to see some baseball. But in the meantime, I know I speak for myself. I'm having so much fun discussing this stuff with you guys. So, you know, thanks so much for getting together and doing this stuff. And to the listeners, thank you guys. We hope that you will stick with us. If you're just discovering this, please, you know, subscribe and rate and review us and like us and tell your friends about us. You can go to yankees.com/podcast to get all previous episodes of Deep to Left with Bucky Dent. Or if you want to listen to the other podcasts on the Yankees Magazine Podcast Network, which is the Yankees Magazine Podcast, I encourage you to do that as well. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter @YanksMagazine. Write us letters to podcast@yankees.com. And of course, subscribe to Yankees Magazine by going to yankees.com/publications. Bucky, Al, can't wait to do it again in 2 weeks. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks so much.
Can't wait to do the next one.
Hey, this is Giancarlo Stan. If you like what you're hearing, why don't you rate and review us? And while you're at it, tell your friends to subscribe. Thanks so much and go Yankees.